Without finishing household duties. Translation. The damsels of Raja, after pastimes of laughter, humor, and exchanges of glances, were anguished when Krishna left them. They used to follow him with their eyes, and thus they sat down with stunned intelligence and could not finish their household duties. Purport. In his boyhood at Vrindavan, Lord Krishna was notorious as a teasing friend in transcendental love to all the girls his age. His love for them was so intense that there is no comparison to that ecstasy, and the damsels of Raja were so much attached to him that their affection excelled that of the great demigods like Brahma and Shiva. Lord Krishna finally admitted his defeat before the transcendental affection of the gopis and declared that he was unable to repay them for their unalloyed affection. Although the gopis were seemingly anguished, by the Lord's teasing behavior. When Krishna would leave them, they could not tolerate the separation and used to follow him with their eyes and minds. They were so stunned by the situation that they could not finish their household duties. No one could excel him even in the dealings of love exchanged between boys and girls. It is said in the revealed scriptures that Lord Krishna personally never goes beyond the boundary of Vrindavan. He remains there eternally because of the transcendental love of the inhabitants. Thus, even though he is not visible at present, he is not away from Vrindavan for a moment. Om Gyane Timirandasya Gyananana Salakaya Shakshurun Vinitam Yena Tasmai Si Gurave Nama Si Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Si Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Si Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada is presenting the exchanges between Krishna and the gopis of Vrindavan in a very nice and innocent way. Srila Prabhupada is describing how Krishna was acting as a teasing friend in transcendental love. In this way, Srila Prabhupada is not putting the emphasis on the kamanuga activity or the activities which resemble lust. It is said that amongst the five rasas, four are in sambandhanuga, where the essence is simply the relationship, the loving exchange. And one is known as kamanuga, which is where the affection is expressed in activities which very much resemble lust, and yet are not lust, and yet are of a different nature. Although the word kama is used for the pastimes of the gopis. Srila Prabhupada is here not at all emphasizing the kama aspect of the relationship, but is emphasizing the sambandha aspect, as a teasing friend in transcendental love. And in that way, really going to the essence of the entire pastimes that exist between Krishna and the gopis. One should not become bewildered that there are such apparently lusty exchanges between Krishna and the gopis as boys and girls, and overlook the deeper aspect of the matter. Not that we are in any way minimizing the significance of these exchanges between Krishna and the gopis, the kamanuga activity, but we are understanding that the essence is the exchange of love that exists between the Supreme Lord and his pure devotees. And where the gopis displayed a level of pure devotion which is beyond what anyone else ever displayed, because no material circumstance, no matter how unfavorable, could withhold the gopis from going 100% in the direction of pleasing Krishna. There was no question of calculating the material interest and the spiritual interest. There was no consideration of trying to combine both interests. One might develop a mentality where one thinks that, all right, I should definitely give preference to the spiritual interest. But if I can combine the material aims simultaneously, that would even be better. Right? If I meet both ends, my spiritual objective and my material objective both met, great. The gopis were not concerned at all. It was not part of their mentality. They were not operating in this way. They were not carefully calculating in a way to meet both interests. The gopis simply only one interest, Krishna's interests, and then our own. It has no meaning. Right? Everything, our whole existence is simply for pleasing Krishna and not for pleasing ourselves. So in this way, the gopis became so, endeared themselves so much to Krishna that Krishna's promise, which is yeyatamam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajami aham, as one surrenders unto me, I will reward accordingly. Krishna couldn't keep that promise. It wasn't possible. That promise in the Adi Lila chapter 4 of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this topic is being described. It is the main theme of the entire chapter. And based on that verse from Bhagavatam Naparayaham, where Krishna is finally stating that I cannot repay you for your service. And Krishna finally says, therefore, let your own activities testify to your glories. And this is because it's all there is. There's nothing greater as your own activity. Thus, there is nothing I can give in exchange that can match what you gave me. If someone gives you a diamond and you give something of much lower value, it doesn't match. And this, so exchange of gifts must at least show equal sacrifice. But the gopis, they gave more. They gave more than Krishna even himself can give. Because Krishna he is enjoying. He is the supreme enjoyer. He is Bhaktaram Yagyatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. He is the Bhaktaram. He is the supreme enjoyer. But the gopis are not at all concerned with being the enjoyer. Their whole existence is to be the servant of the supreme enjoyer. Thus, their constitutional position is different from the constitutional position of Krishna. And thus, Krishna cannot fully understand the position of the gopis. Thus, he appeared as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for that purpose, to be in that position of servant. It is said that the dealings of the gopis, externally or apparently, they were disturbed by Krishna's teasing activities. But it said when Krishna left Vrindavan, they simply experienced such separation. There wasn't one, two. They were so stunned by the situation that they could not finish their household duties. That is the situation. So the gopis lived in great separation, and it is said here that Krishna, however, never leaves Vrindavan. Vrindavanam parityaya padam ekam na gacchati. Krishna doesn't set one step outside of Vrindavan. But the gopis were not satisfied with that. That wasn't good enough. Uddhava came with that message. Uddhava was sent by Krishna to Vrindavan. Uddhava came basically with that message. Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, he's always here. But that wasn't good enough. Because the gopis wanted Krishna's undivided attention, really. So that they could make their offerings. Sometimes we are thinking about how Akrura came and took Krishna away from Vrindavan in the chariot. And it was Krishna's desire to go. They wanted to go. So why did the residents of Vrindavan make such a fuss if they were devotees of Krishna? If Krishna wanted to go to Mathura, why didn't they all just dance in front of the chariot, throwing flowers the whole way? It's ecstasy. Now we're going to Mathura. Wherever we're going, it's Krishna's desire and it's wonderful and Haribol, and just throw the flowers on the path. No. Why not? Why did the gopis stay behind in Vrindavan in a mood of separation? It's difficult to understand because it ultimately does resemble some self-interest because the interest of Krishna was to go to Mathura. But if we look at it in a deeper way, then we can see that there was no self-interest because the gopis knew that Krishna cannot be satisfied to the same level, to the same extent, outside of Vrindavan as he can be in Vrindavan itself. Thus the gopis were basically seeing that what is he doing? He's harming himself. He's leaving Vrindavan. How can he leave Vrindavan? Only in Vrindavan can he be satisfied. He will suffer in separation. There is no question that he will be happy, and there is no question that we can serve him. Here, even when the gopis met Krishna at Kurukshetra, it wasn't all right. It wasn't that now we are reunited and now everything is fine in Kurukshetra. I said, all right, the gopis are there, Krishna is there, everything is there. No, Vrindavan was missing. Thus, the holy dham of Vrindavan is essential to the pastimes of Krishna. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives an explanation of the holy name. And he explains, he said, the holy name is the resting place of the holy name is the dham. Nam is resting in the dham. And he said that without developing a relationship with the holy dham, one cannot realize the full purport of the nam. That's like quite a significant statement, very deep statement. If I expand on that a little bit, and we remember Madhavacharya's commentary on the first chapter of the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, it is included at the end of the chapter in the form of notes, which is very nice. These notes are really good. We can just look at the 10th canto, first chapter, and then there's a section of notes, and they're very nice points. And there it is mentioned that Madhavacharya says that Mathura is a state of consciousness, which is very interesting. We're speaking now of Vrindavan not just as a physical location, but now we're speaking of Vrindavan as a state of consciousness. So that also expands the whole concept of going to Vrindavan, because not everyone may be physically in the position to go to Vrindavan, or it may also not be the order of the spiritual master, it may not be the service, there may be a service elsewhere. It's not that the aim of our movement is all to sit in the holy dham. The aim of our movement is to obviously spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So Vrindavan is also an internal state of consciousness. So one must have this state of consciousness. Vrindavan is the place which is fully dedicated to the pleasure of Krishna. There is nothing in Vrindavan that is not dedicated to the pleasure of Krishna. And when we go to North India and we go to the holy Dham, Vrindavan Dham, and we apparently see things which are certainly not for the pleasure of Krishna, know them not to be Vrindavan. Know them to be a covering of Vrindavan, of Yoga Maya energy. But know that that's not Vrindavan. As simple as that. Thus, when we go to the holy Dham, we go in search for Vrindavan. We cannot get out of the car and think, finally we've reached Vrindavan. Right? No, we have not finally reached Vrindavan. We just got out of the car. Now we have to actually search for Vrindavan. And when we search, then we may find that Vrindavan, and there we find Krishna's footprints. There we find Krishna everywhere. There Krishna is nearby. That is certain. Once we find Vrindavan, then surely Krishna is nearby. He's not far. He cannot be far. He's very close. That is the nature of Vrindavan. Krishna is always near. In this way, every devotee, whether we physically go or only internally go, we must go to Vrindavan, and we must maintain that internal Vrindavan within our hearts. And when I say Vrindavan, that expands into Mayapur, and that expands into the portions of Jagannath Puri that are known as Vrindavan, and so on. But we need an internal Vrindavan that relates within ourselves. There we must reside. In the nectar of devotion, which is based on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu there is a reference to the Vishram Mandir, which means a temple of rest, a temple of peace, one can say, or a transcendental temple, which is like a resting place. So Srila Rupa Goswami writes that he desires that his book, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, will be such a Vishram Mandir for Sanatana Goswami. He says, my aim is with this book to provide a Vishram Mandir for Sanatana Goswami. This Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is a construction manual for constructing that Vishram Mandir, because it shows us how to create that internal Vrindavan, how to enter within our heart in Vrindavan. It shows us how to build that Vishram Mandir. And thus it is a Vishram Mandir, but it's step by step built up. It's not that on page number one, here is the Vishram Mandir. It's like he built it in front of us, and then there is the Vishram, and at the end of the book, there is the Vishram Mandir. I mean, that's one way of looking at the nectar of devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So that is what Vrindavan is. It is a refuge. It is a shelter. It is our shelter. And one who is residing there cannot be touched by anything. Even although we are living in a harsh world, Janu's story, a crazy kid in Germany going on a shooting spree in a school, shooting school children, a 17-year-old boy shooting school children, it all sort of comes together on our plate, right, as a few different things to look at. Heavy, harsh. And how to not be affected? Nirapeksha. How to be completely transcendental. In the Bhagavad Gita, Senayor Ubayor Maje, there is Krishna and Arjuna between the two armies, and Arjuna is described as Visidantam. He is described as lamenting. He's in a lamenting state. And Krishna, Prahasya. Prahasya means like really smiling. His teeth are showing. Right? In Prahasya, the teeth are showing. So it's not just a mild smile. No, Krishna is like looking at this whole upcoming disaster. And he's there, you know, like completely in a great consciousness and is like having a good time. That's the Supreme Lord. Because the Supreme Lord never leaves Vrindavan. He's in Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada so nicely understood that when he named the deities in Delhi Sisi Radha Parthasarathi, and it was criticized, right? Even at the time it was questioned, how is it possible? Parthasarathi? Radha? What has Radha got to do with Parthasarathi? That's Krishna and Arjuna on the chariot, that's a different ras, right? How is that relating? And Prabhupada simply said, no, wherever there is Krishna, there is Radharani, right? That's it. Radharani is always there because Krishna never sets one step out of Vrindavan. He is internally always in Vrindavan. Prahasya, he was smiling, brightly smiling on that battlefield of Kurukshetra. Was he smiling because he was thinking, ha-ha, many will be killed here. I'm going to have, in my universal form, I'm going to devour all these personalities. Ha-ha. I will have a nice snack. Ha-ha. Like potato chips. Crack, crack, crack. One of the other. Yes. All the heroes being devoured. Ha-ha. The cruel, all-devouring Supreme Lord. No. Prahasya. Srila Prabhupada elsewhere also speaks about that man on the planet went to war. Men on planet Earth went to war, and at the end of the war, they were all lying on their back on the earth. And Krishna was laughing, Prabhupada says. Sort of like, these are the sort of things, you know, you think, like, what are we going to do with this? Right? Shall we write a footnote type of thing you get sometimes? Of course, we don't like footnotes in Prabhupada's books. We like his own footnotes, but not footnotes from others. So, because Krishna is so transcendental, transcendental doesn't just mean that he sees beyond the material body, that he sees here we are all eternal spirit souls. Krishna's smile, he sees that, and simultaneously he is residing in Vrindavan, and Krishna sees also the foolishness. Krishna sees, like, what are we doing? We're wasting our time. The whole world can be Vrindavan when we are simply using it for that purpose. Srila Prabhupada, with his amazing transcendental vision, was creating new Vrindavans, new Mayapurs, and new this and new that. And it was very intriguing to the devotees, because the question was, well, is this new Vrindavan, does it have the same potency as the old Vrindavan? Many questions were asked on this topic. And Prabhupada, each time, asserted them, yes, yes, yes. And it seems like, well, yes, yes, yes. And a pundit might want to argue. A pundit who has read plenty of books may come up with, well, yes, but even after the dissolution takes place and this entire material realm is destroyed, Vrindavan is still there. And will your new Vrindavan, will it still be there? Will it or not? Will there be Prabhupada's palace of gold? Will it still be there? What do you think? What I think is that then there will be no difference between the new Vrindavan and the Vrindavan. Yes, it will still be there, the new Vrindavan. It will be the same as the other Vrindavan. It will just be all there. Maybe the palace of gold may not be there, but That's not the essence. And maybe it will, who knows? I don't know. But certainly it will be there. But it will be there resting on the devotion of the residents. The residents of that new Vrindavan can invoke the presence of Vrindavan. And Prabhupada is the resident of new Vrindavan, and therefore Vrindavan is manifest, simply because Prabhupada resides there. When Prabhupada called it new Vrindavan, it meant that he himself was residing there, and he himself was worshipping in the same way as Vrindavan. And thus he lent his through his bhakti, he attracted the presence of Vrindavan there. It is like that, that a great Vaishnava can manifest Vrindavan. Golokira Premadana Harinam Sankirtana. Yes. Just by performing Sankirtan, Vrindavan is present. Ye dina griyate bhajana deki griyate golokabaya. That day that within the house one is performing the bhajan of Krishna, that day Golok will be there. So these two statements are providing the proof. Otherwise you think, what's he rambling on about? Where does he get all this? You know, where, which book, in which book has he read this? I didn't entirely read every word for word in the book, but with these two verses, I think I provided adequate proof. So in this way, we live in Vrindavan. There, in Vrindavan, we are everyone is looking at the gopis. In Vrindavan, there are five rasas, and the devotees are known to be in five rasas. But it's not that these rasas are existing all separate from each other, that one is not relating to the other, that there's a time when Krishna is with the cowherd boys, and then he's with the cowherd boys, and then times with the gopis, time with his parents, acting out to the role of child, and it's all sort of separate. It's not. It's all interwoven. One is all adding to the other. They're all enhancing one another, these various rasas. The gopis have a desire to meet Krishna. Krishna has a desire to meet them. The cowherd boys are also very eager and eagerly waiting. We find such descriptions. Nisanta Lila, end of the night. Radha and Krishna awaken from their from the pastimes they performed in the night. It's time for Krishna to go back home very quickly because Mother Yasoda is ready. The cowherd boys are already awake. They are ready to go to the field. They are ready to go to the forest. Let's go. Mother Yasoda is very eager to dress Krishna. The cowherd boys are so eager they can't wait. They even join in. Right? And it's a whole thing. It's like dressing Krishna in the morning is like deity worship on the altar. Everyone together is bathing Krishna. This one puts the ankle bells. That one puts the cloth. They're all helping. They're all helping some are preparing the bathing paraphernalia. If you see our deity paraphernalia room, etc., it's in many ways resembling the activities of the spiritual world. That's so amazing about deity worship, really, that it is so close to the activities of the spiritual world. And sometimes the pujaris, at least when I was a pujari, I was feeling like, I don't know, you know, how long am I going to last in this? And after 3 months they threw me out because I regularly was falling asleep in the last arti while doing the arti. Dropping paraphernalia even. They had me cook many offerings also, and then in my defense, you know, they gave me a lot of service. But still, I guess I wasn't cut out. I couldn't appreciate. Now I'm thinking, wow, how amazing. These pujaris, they're virtually in the spiritual world, the whole thing, because it's just the same. It's just the same. That's what they call it. The gopis are preparing the bowls, the towels, everything is there. And I always used to think, God, all these bowls and all these towels, you know, being a renunciant, you know, it's sort of like, I was already a renunciant when I was a kid, what can I say? I was always in there. And so I always think, there, towels, there, bowls, there, cups, all these things, you know, all sort of like unnecessary paraphernalia type of thing that just complicate life, right? Get rid of it all. And then it all comes back in Krishna consciousness. Yeah? No, it has to be this towel. No, it cannot be like that. And it's a whole fuss. The whole fuss, you know. That reminded me of the linen cupboard of my mother. I found it back in the deity paraphernalia room. But then I find the same in Vrindavan, in the descriptions of Vrindavan. It's right there, in the spiritual world. Because, wow. All these intricate arrangements. In this way, we can see how close we live to Vrindavan, how much it is actually here, and how by installing the deities, one is really invoking Vrindavan. Not that necessarily everyone is in Vrindavan, because just like in the Vrindavan in North India, here also, the Vrindavan is covered by a layer of Yogamaya. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. And here also, maybe many residing who cannot enter into the Dhamma, or only enter to some degree into the Dhamma, just as many of us, that is how it is. It is here the same challenge. So in that way, it is very amazing how this movement is really expanding Vrindavan over the entire planet. And as long as the Sankirtan movement is there, it is manifesting like that, and in no way diminished. And that is absolutely amazing. Amazing, if you think of it. Okay, any comments, any questions? Any of these points? I know I come out a little sudden with this. Any comments, any questions? So, and if you do that, then you get no questions. So what I'll do is I'll ramble on for a minute or two. You know. So, okay.
In the beginning, you mentioned that the Dham is not a place but a state of consciousness. Isn't everything like that? Like even the material world. It's not really a place. as sometimes we describe it almost as dreamlike existence. It's also a state of consciousness.
It is also a state of consciousness.
Isn't it?
Okay, but I think what Madhavacharya was saying, he was referring to these notes of the 10th chapter, is that Vrindavan is also a state of consciousness. I think the word also is there, if I remember it correct. But so I think it's both a place and a state of consciousness. Just like the material, it's not jagat mitya. It is the universe is not false. The universe is real. It is a place. We are really in Sweden, but Sweden is not really... It's never fixed. It's constant in motion. So how can you ever say this is Sweden? You cannot. You can even not measure it in a millionth of a second moment, a picture. I mean, if you try to take in a film, it's all these little images, right, in a sequence, one after another. So you cannot just say, I take out one image, that is Sweden. No. Because even that one image is already changing.
It's a continuum.
Yeah, it's a continuum. So it's a continuum. So there's no question that you can say reality is. Nothing is. Everything is simply changing. And if you look in the mirror in the morning and you see that familiar face, it's not a familiar face. You're looking at a stranger. You're looking at someone you've never seen before. A new person. You just have to look careful. And you can put a photo next to it from yesterday and see the 17 differences. And my God, where it overnight came from, that hair, I don't know. But it appeared, right? Where that, whatever it was, you know, it's a totally new person, a totally new situation. Each day, each moment, it is definitely like that. So in that way,
what I find so interesting is that even material science, you know, the physicists especially are realizing that the universe on an atomic level actually makes no sense. And now they finally admit that we have to study consciousness more than anything else, because it all seems to be an issue of consciousness. Like when they do atomic research, you can never locate atoms and the electrons, etc. Can never be located. That's what you said, like, with a film. That
sure.
Even when they take a photo, it's possible to take photos. But the scientists have come to almost like this Zen-like understanding that it's only there because we are looking at it. In reality, it's something very, very different. So they're puzzled right now, puzzled. And they say that the next level of what we have to research is consciousness, otherwise we are stuck. And in that sense, Krishna consciousness, that's what it's called. Krishna.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting.
We're not an international society, in a location or something. It's all about a state of mind or actual state of the soul.
Yeah, one can say there are like fundamental elements in the equation, you know, that are basically there, and the Acharyas have captured it. Right? And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, with his amazing, brilliant intelligence, phrased all these terms, Krishna consciousness, which is, of course, it's found, you know, in Bhakti Bhava. Right? Bhakti Bhava is there, so it's there. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta set all these definitions in English. Right? He's the founder of that, really. And Prabhupada carried that to us, and Prabhupada understood it and assimilated it completely and visualized it, one can say, really visualized all these levels and of Krishna consciousness. Yes.
What would Krishna consciousness be in Sanskrit?
Well, you know, like it's said that it is based on Krishna Bhakti Bhava Krishna Bhakti Rasa Ta Mati, right? So Bhakti Bhav, which is also is there's this verse Apanikarimu Bhakti Bhava Angikar. So again, this Bhakti Bhava is coming back there. So there is Bhakti Bhava, Bhakti Ras. These are the Bhav and Ras are the words that sort of would relate to it. What was I going to say?
Can one say that wherever devotees come together and meditate about Krishna, talk about Krishna's pastimes? That's also Vrindavan.
Yes. Yes. That's That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said. Yedina griyate, you know, that day that there is discussion in the, or the house of glorification of Krishna in the house, bhajan, worship of Krishna in the house, that day Goloka will be present. He said it directly. So that's a fact. And I like also Prabhupada giving his explanation of basically reading Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's explanation of Krishna consciousness. That's not an artificial imposition on the mind. I mean, that of course is, once that is understood, then it's very easy. The scientists are just very slowly coming up. What is consciousness? Consciousness is, one can say it's like a light with a regulator switch and in a dark room. And we slowly turn up the regulator, so slowly it gets brighter. So as it's not bright, we don't see very much, but we see contours and gradually it becomes, and finally we see Krishna. When the light is full. So consciousness means Krishna consciousness, actually. And otherwise it's just not actually fully developed consciousness, that's all. It's just therefore it's practically, it's sometimes called abhas, or reflection of consciousness. Any other consciousness than Krishna consciousness is a reflection of consciousness. It's abhas.
Srinivas. Is it not the desire of the intelligence?
I'm going to deal with it. It is said that thinking, feeling, and willing are the functions of the mind. So desire is explained there. The dynamics of desire are expressed in those terms, thinking, feeling, and willing. That the thought appears, the feeling comes in, and then the willing factor becomes very strong. Thinking, feeling, willing. So this is the function of the mind. Then the intelligence is looking at that particular feeling and desire and analyzing if it is actually going to provide the happiness or the pleasure that we expect from it. And then the intelligence, if things look favorable, will find ways to implement or to realize that desire. That's the word, to realize that desire. That's how it sort of works, the relation between desire and intelligence. And in regards to Krishna consciousness, yes, if we desire, then Krishna will reveal. If we desire to serve, we really desire to serve, Krishna will reveal himself. That's the key. There's no other way. I mean, the scientist may come to the edge of the issue, right? And sort of come like, yes, we need to enter into consciousness, but they get lost. They get more and more lost, and it gets more and more difficult because they can no longer just measure. You know, it was easy when they could just measure with a yardstick, but now, and weigh things and whatever, but now they can no longer measure. Now they have to, they see some, it acts in this way and it acts in that way each time. And measurement means comparing, right? The scientists compare one thing to another and they start to put things in groups, These things are similar, they belong together, these things, and separate them. And in this way, we get a system. We have if you look at the whole range of varieties, we have this type, this type, this type, this type, and thus we understand that the nature of this particular study object is within this range. But with consciousness, you can't really deal with it, because we're seeing that every living being has a distinct individual consciousness, although there are similarities. Right? There are common factors, and yet every living being is a distinct individual. So that's like, so it's hard. And when you try to reduce consciousness to just a common factors, you're in trouble. So thus, the scientists don't get there. But if one has a desire to serve Krishna, then Krishna will reveal himself. And then ultimately, you cannot know Krishna. Right? You can never know Krishna in full. You can only know what Krishna reveals about himself. Nothing more. And they also, they are just simply seeing what Krishna reveals to them. That they don't get that. They walk around measuring in an area which Krishna has revealed to them. And if they become too sinful, they go down in the universe where less is revealed. Like the subterranean heavenly planets where there is no God consciousness at all. Here at least you get a few hints. So everyone's just put in a particular field which he can explore, and he cannot explore beyond. So science won't get there.
Did I understand Srinivas' question correctly, that he said the desire of intelligence? Is that what you said?
That's what he said.
Of intelligence?
Yeah.
Does intelligence have desire?
No, I explained that's a function of the mind.
Right.
So I separate that. But I first explained that no, intelligence has no desire. It's a separate thing. It's a function of the mind, and the intelligence is assisting that, is analyzing that desire and assisting that desire, working for it.
It's a different element.
Yeah, it's a different element. I mean, it's a different function, and it works. Yeah, I thought I explained it, but maybe I should explain it again. And then that was point. In point A, I answered the question in A and B. In A, I try to explain there's a desire belongs to the mind. The intelligence judges that desire, favorable or unfavorable, and then tries to realize it. Then answer B to the question was, since the theme that he was responding to with his question was about Krishna consciousness, and he was, Krishna consciousness, if we look at desire, it's a matter of desire to come to Krishna consciousness. That's correct. If there's a desire to serve, then Krishna will reveal himself. So from what I understand, actually he was saying something, he was putting his finger on a principle, and I think that's correct. The desire to serve, Krishna will reveal himself.
Is intelligence?
Is that true? Yeah, he says yes.
Desire to serve.
He likes that. He has it.
Is intelligence controlled? And what controls it?
Is intelligence controlled? And what controls it? It is controlled by 1 minute. Now, is it Aniruddha or Pradyumna? Oh boy, it's one of those things where you have to. I have a bed.
Yeah.
Who?
Oh,
Dennis Pradyumna. Okay, that's Pradyumna. So Pradyumna, one of the two, must be Pradyumna. Is controlling the intelligence, and he's so. In this way, Krishna expands himself. Vishnu expansions and Chaturvyuha is not just. Expansion of Krishna. No, they are involved in the universal affairs. They have some influence there.
But within the individual, do I, as a spirit soul, have any control over my intelligence?
Yes, we have control over all material energy. Limited control.
The intelligence influenced or determined by my understanding of myself, of the ego?
Well, I mean, we can And the intelligence is a gift, which is given, the Dhammi Buddhi Yogam. It is given to us, the Buddhi. So we don't have control over what intelligence we will have. Right? We can, of course, exercise it and strengthen it, or we can neglect it, never use it, and play with a computer all day and cut and paste and never think again, right, in our life, and gradually become totally lazy. Right? And then I had to, the other day, I tried to cut and paste the number or the reservation number of the ticket, and it didn't work. You know, I did it 3 times, and then I go, God, do I really have to memorize this number? And then my mind is going, it's not true. I didn't have pen and paper, so now I have to memorize it. God. And then I thought, well, actually, it's only six digits. It's only 6 digits. Maybe I could actually do it. Yeah. So it's amazing. Now intelligence is a gift from Krishna, and according to our karma, and only by devotional service can one get more intelligence, finer intelligence. Yes. But one can also cultivate the mode of goodness, so then get a little more intelligence of goodness and so on. But by devotional service we can get real intelligence about our actual true nature. And you can see that when Prabhupada uses the definition of intelligence, it has to do with understanding Krishna consciousness and acting according to Krishna consciousness. That is intelligence. This one is less intelligent than that one. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Is it all has to do with that. Yeah. It doesn't have anything to do with who can fly planes or who can design very complex patterns and structures and so on. It has nothing to do with that. It simply has to do with who understands that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, that we are His eternal servant, and who's acting upon that. That's intelligence. And that's not so easy.
Are you saying that this is what Srila Prabhupada meant when he used the less intelligent?
Yes. I'm saying.
Really?
Yes. Oh, I can make a strong case for it.
I could make a case for the opposite.
I would argue you. Your case. We would have an interesting debate. Yes. I'm ready. I'm totally ready. Anytime. It wakes me up even.
It's a Latin word.
That's okay.
It's intelligent.
Buddhi, therefore it's poor. The translations are a deficient.
The poor translation.
Yeah, Sanskrit is better. Buddhi.
Okay. So you want to make a case?
Absolutely.
Based on the Sanskrit.
Better than on the Latin. I want to make.
But in the Latin translation, it makes perfect sense.
I don't want to start there with
because interlegary means distinguish.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody has a problem with that.
Even in astrology, Vedic astrology, which is a science, right? The intelligence is divided into part of it is controlled by Jupiter, right? And the Buddh, right, is relating to Jupiter, just. Like Wednesday is Budwar, right, as our residents from India can confirm, is ruled by Jupiter. So Budh, the word Budh includes wisdom. Right? It doesn't just include the ability to distinguish. That, in the astrological understanding, is more expressed in Mercury. Right? Mercurian intelligence is the intelligence to where analysis of material things and so on. Yeah, I mean, I don't have to. I think I'll just establish the principle, leave it at that. ability to distinguish between this, categorize and so, maneuver and so on. But the Jupiterian intelligence or aspect of intelligence is the has to do with wisdom. Wisdom means Krishna consciousness.
Ultimately.
Of course. It begins somewhere as of the abhas, on the reflection of Krishna consciousness. There is already the reflection of wisdom is also taken, has an element of that wisdom in it. So we see a wisdom in this world which is a reflection of the original Krishna conscious wisdom. Thus, the definition of more or less intelligence should be judged from buddhi.
Wow. If we would have more time now.
Yeah, we could.
I would really like to get into
it. I can see that. We save it for another day, I think.
All I can say is whoa.
Huh?
All I can say is whoa.
Good. I'm happy. Yeah. Yeah, maybe one day when I have nothing to do, if that day will ever come, I'll write a paper about it.
Yeah, I would like to see that.
Yeah, I could see that. Not only would you like to see it, you would respond to it also. I get the gist. No, maybe I should put my money where my mouth is. Yes.
You said before that 96% of the shastras or the Vedas were gone.
Did I say that before? Well, a long time ago, I mentioned that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur said in the Krishna Samhita, where he gives an elaborate explanation in 60 pages, and amongst those 60 pages is a statement that only 6% of the Vedic literatures are still available today.
Does that also count the Upanishads and the
everything.
Purana.
I mean, he didn't give a detailed analysis, and I'm not knowledgeable enough to tell you more. I can't subdivide it and say how much percent of the Upanishads and how much that's.
I
only know 6% of the Vedic literature is still available according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Krishna Samhita.
Okay.
Which is a shocking low number.
What, have you got any comments about, like for instance, Purana,
Bhavishya
Purana, very popular.
Bhavishya Purana, it is generally considered that there is a lot of interpolation. Interpolation means that a lot of things have been written in later, and it smells that the authors might have a British origin and a Christian agenda.
Yeah.
And thus, if we read about that Isa is going to appear in the Bhavishya Purana and the devotees are running around and going, this is wonderful, this is the proof, and now we see like the authority of the Vedic scripture, etc., then I must disappoint them that at least that scholars will really laugh at the devotees when we are getting carried away by the Bhavishya Purana.
And
the
oldest one is only 200 years, so the oldest copy.
What's that?
The oldest copy of the book.
The oldest copy of the book.
Yes, it's from 1809.
Yeah.
And it was printed by a British group.
Yeah. There are many things about the. I mean, I'm not the expert to give you the rundown on it, but if you would ask the devotees in Oxford, they could give you like a list of like chop, and make minced meat of the thing.
I guess once we hear you say it, so.
We are finished. No, we are not.
I have heard that once Jayadeva Maharaj was here, and he mentioned about one Mataji who has a severe physical problem, and she took shelter of Vrindavan because she did not experience so much of pain because she was in Vrindavan.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering, like, how to like for oneself, when one is not really so realized about Vrindavan, how to distinguish that when one tries to take shelter of Vrindavan, it's imaginary Vrindavan or real Vrindavan?
Yeah, very difficult, but Krishna will help. So we simply take shelter of Srila Prabhupada. We take shelter of the process that Rupa Goswami gave. So in this way, Prabhupada gave us Nectar of Devotion, gave us his books. So we follow his books, and then Krishna will reveal. Then when we get these revelations within our heart, then your question arises. But Krishna will help. And if we are just faithful about staying within what is authorized, then Krishna will help and everything will be revealed. And if one is, especially to a person who is sort of at the very last stage of life or something and goes to Vrindavan, or someone who is leaving the body anywhere, Krishna may give so much. It's not that Krishna reciprocates in an automatic way. So he reciprocates according to the situation. And someone at the last moment may have amazing realizations from Krishna. And then you will know it. Men, women, yes. Because of course, the case, now if you go into the less intelligent debate, because he's completely focused like a bull terrier now. Sankhya's teeth. Okay. But I'll quickly deal with the less intelligent issue. In the Chaitanya Bhagavad, there is a reference of a program in the house of Srivas. And at night, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is performing a drama with the devotees. And then there's a group of ladies that are also allowed. And some people are raising questions. Women? Ladies? Here? And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, they are not ladies. They are transcendental. They're completely transcendental. So, in other words, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself made the distinction about identifying with the body and rising above. So one can never identify a Vaishnava with the body. And yesterday, Brahma, I was leaving and I was surrounded by a few scholars, you know, I mean, Rupa Sanatan and Gopinath Acharya from Oxford, right? And they were in my room and we were talking, so I was getting in my skeptical, scholarly mode. So I was talking about the mystification of effects in India, and in India everything becomes mystified, right? Immediately it's a miracle, immediately it's holy, immediately it's spiritual, and I'll start give examples, you know, devotees never sleep, they rest, devotees they never pass stool, they take bath, and devotees don't become, and I said, and they don't become senile, they enter into samadhi, right? I turn around, Brahma, and I hit my toe really hard, you know, and I immediately realized, no, even when they go senile, they're still in samadhi, right? They're still in samadhi, even when they go senile. So devotees are extraordinarily transcendental and material, even apparent material limitations, they apply much less than we think.
What is the meaning of senile?
Senile means that gradually it becomes difficult to figure out what your name is, whether you have brushed your teeth or not, and you have to go and feel if your toothbrush is wet or dry.
When you find a toothbrush in the refrigerator and a milk in the bathroom.
Brahma also has good example. No, but in other words, when the mental capacities go down so much that the milk is in the bathroom and the toothbrush winds up in the refrigerator. Yes.
And that happens.
Yes, that comes. These things do happen in the old days. Yeah, something to look forward to. But my toe told me yesterday that still in Samadhi. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
No, I think that's the thing. For a while, I think.